This is Phil Farrand, and I am driving around. I am not driving home today. Well, I am, but I'm not driving home while I'm recording this because I'm getting together with a buddy that I haven't gotten together with for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. Our schedules just haven't aligned, and so we're actually going to be able to get together today, which is a good thing. I'm looking forward to it. But what that means is that I could either record this after we talk, come back to headquarters, my major client, and then drive home, or on my way over there, I could just take some back streets slowly, do it now. And I thought, you know, it'd probably be better to do it now. It is episode 161. Amazing. Anyways, it's been a good week. Haven't had a lot of conversations with friends this week. One of my buddies that I get together with on Tuesday was sick, didn't get together with them. My buddy that I normally get together with on Friday had some other appointments, did not get together with him. My couple that I get together with on Saturday, he was called into work for the weekend, so didn't get together with him. And so it's just been kind of bouncing around. My kids that I normally get together with on Friday night, my granddaughter was visiting over with somebody else. My daughter's biological mom, they had her for the weekend. And so we talked to my daughter and son-in-law and said, do you all just want to have like a little time together? And they said, yes. And so we said, that's just fine. No problem. So they did that. So, but it's been a good week. It's been a good week. I've been working and working away, writing and writing and writing. And it's so interesting because every time I think I'm about done, then there's just something else. And so I was all the way down to Jesus dying. You know, it's in that last few moments. And then I discovered there's another chapter in there. But it's good because just from a mechanics standpoint, and a lot of writing is mechanics. I mean, there are certain expectations that people have in terms of pacing that you just can't hit a bunch of stuff and then leave certain things out. One of the things that happens sometimes is you can have, you know, really cool stuff, but then when it gets to the end of something, it doesn't wrap up well. There's not that nice closure. And typically, what happens in those situations, like if there's a trilogy or something like that, that the first movie has this triumphant ending, ta-da, and then it's like, hey, we're making more movies, you know, so then you're scrambling. And then sometimes what happens is you get to that final movie and it's sort of anticlimactic. The Matrix was sort of that way. You know, it was like, oh, battle, 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 battle. And then we get to the end and Neo is hauled off and ta-da, done. So it's nice when things end well, but in order for things to end well, there's certain mechanics that you have to observe. And so I was looking at this book and I was looking at the interaction of Mary and Jesus, and I was getting to the end and I wasn't going to be able to have a nice final scene between the two of them before Jesus died. And there were certain mechanical things that just weren't in place. And I think it was Tuesday morning. I had been working along on this chapter that is the void. It's that moment when Jesus says, my God, why have you forsaken me? And I knew that moment was coming, but I wasn't really exactly sure how all the pieces in this game were going to move around inside that void. And I had started going down one track with it. And then I thought, wait, if I go that direction, I'm not really going to have that nice scene. Oh, that's not going to work. And so then I was backing up and as I was going in Tuesday morning, I was just really kind of thrashing about it and thinking, thinking. And then as I was driving in, it's so fascinating because I was just kind of all tangled up and I couldn't figure out what I was going to do there. And then you have one little whisper and then you sort of wander into that whisper, and then there's another little whisper based on that. Then eventually you end up and it's like, hey, there it is. So that's been fun. And what kind of started it was this oblique tangential idea of just get back to basics and figure out what the fundamental core things you're trying to accomplish in this scene, start from there. And once I did that and backed up and sort of just pulled all the pieces back on the board and decided how they needed to progress through the board, then, you know, I was able, I think, it's not on the page yet, I think was able to get the pieces in place. So at this point, I think I have the major pieces on the page in terms of, okay, so we're going, there's a stoplight here that's flashing red as opposed to working, and I wasn't sure who was going next. I think I've got the major pieces in the scene called the darkness. Those are on the page. They need to be tweaked, but they're there. I think I have the major pieces on the page in the chapter called the knowing, which is this thing that Jesus goes through while he's on the cross during the darkness. And now I have the pieces, but they're not on the page yet for the void. And I think Jesus dies at the end of the void. I don't think there's anything that comes after that. And so I'm encouraged. I think we're okay. You just never know till it's on the page. So it's really fascinating. It's just writing is so fascinating. Anyways, I have about 15 minutes before I'm supposed to meet my buddy for supper. So this week I came across an article, and I've done podcasts similar to this in the past, but I haven't visited this topic in a while, and I did notice this chapter, and I thought, well, the answer to that question is no. And so when I saw the title of this chapter, I kind of knew where it was going to go, but I thought, oh, let's just read this and see what it is. There was an article that was written by Frida Gittis, I think is her name, G-H-I-T-I-S, Gittis, maybe? And the title of the article was, Are Men Stupid? And she started out with, are men stupid? How else can we explain the endless parade of otherwise successful individuals who by all appearances seem intelligent and competent and yet risk destroying their careers and their personal lives over the chance to have a sexual escapade? And she started out talking about John Edwards, who of course at this point is in the trial, trying to determine how much and what did he do wrong and what he should he pay for what he did wrong. We've got that. We got the Secret Service agents who are going down to Colombia and having dalliances with strippers and prostitutes. And just came out today, apparently this was not an isolated incident. They just never had gotten caught before. There's more investigation coming on there. You know, we have, of course, a president who had problems. Several might be presidents. A few governors, World Bank director. You just see this parade, golfer, top golfer. You see this parade of men who are powerful, who seemingly have good home lives, beautiful wives, lovely children, and who are then throwing it all away for some sexual escapade. And the question is, are they stupid? And my answer would be no, but we'll get to that in a minute. And if you've listened to this podcast for any amount of time, you'll already know where I'm going. The writer of the article is trying to figure this out because it just baffles. She says, this question has baffled women, mostly since biblical times. And she just can't figure out how men could be like that. And she brings up an interesting statement that I thought, well, you're getting close. She says, but the stupidity was in evidence when one of the agents who'd been caught in this prostitution scandal, when one of the agents who had earlier protected Sarah Palin had posted on Facebook that he was checking her out. And the author of the article said, it sounds like the claim of a 13-year-old boy. And the decision to post the comment displays the common sense of an 8-year-old. And then she goes on to say things like, but that level of maturity shines in comparison to the decision of people like Bill Clinton, who risked his presidency to have an affair with Monica Lewinsky and then lied repeatedly about it. Yeah. And she goes through all the other men that, you know, have done this and what they've risked and all that kind of stuff. And she talks about Governor Elliot Spitzer, who I did a podcast on that. And so the question she has is, why does this happen? Well, one of the explanations she says people turn to is that, well, it's just testosterone's fault. It's just the testosterone. Their testosterone's too high. That's what the problem is. When you have driven men like this, it's because of their testosterone. Inevitably, that's going to get them into trouble. Okay, well, if you've read Still Whispers, there's a way to take care of the testosterone problem. And she says other people blame deep psychological needs. Basically, this author comes down and she says, well, it's just arrogance. That these people get so powerful that they think they're untouchable, so they're arrogant, and so that's why they fall into these problems. But as you know, it is all those things, but all those things do not really ferret out the root cause. What is the root cause of all of this? And as you know, I would say that the root cause is flesh. And if you don't understand that, I'm going to go ahead and just turn off the car because I'm here and at the restaurant, and so I'm going to go in a minute, so I'll just finish chatting while we're here. If you don't understand that you have the root cause as flesh, then you end up doing things like calling it, well, it's the sudden IQ drop syndrome. And the writer of the article quite rightly notes that it's not just Democrats or Republicans or Americans or Europeans. It can be all men, Democrats, Republicans, Americans, European, people of all colors, all professions. It happens. And so she does conclude at the end of it that, well, yeah, okay, you know, perhaps men are just stupid when it comes to sex. Because she concludes that it continues to happen to seemingly intelligent, disciplined individuals is a sign that the process will be slow in terms of getting people not to do that. And that in the final analysis, if it has to do with sex, some men really are stupid. Okay, well, I would say that if it has to do with sex, really, with what these men are subjected to, there's probably very few that could survive it. There's a man who was achieving a great deal of success in the operatic world. I just blanked on his last name. William Harness. It's getting a little warm, so I'm going to roll down the window because it's a beautiful day here today. It's, I think, in the 80s today. His name's William Harness, and he very freely shares about the fact that when he first started getting into the operatic world, he had not trained as an operatic singer. He was a Southern gospel singer. He just decided one day he was going to go in for a tryout of like the Metropolitan Opera or something. He gets in there. He learned a couple of operatic numbers, didn't have any idea what he was supposed to be doing. And so he just gets up there and sings with his big voice, you know, and he's a crowd favorite. Everybody loves him. But he doesn't make the auditions and doesn't get moved on, and the whole crowd is unhappy. And then the people actually come out who are judging the competition. They bring him back out and they say, okay, look, yes, this guy has an amazing voice. This guy has a voice that only comes along once in a voice teacher's life. But the fact is, he doesn't know anything about opera. That's obvious. We can't put him through. He doesn't know anything about opera. But what we're going to do is we're going to set aside a fund to get him some opera lessons, and when he's ready, we'll bring him back. So, of course, everybody thought that was great. So he takes all these opera letters. It's great. You know, he's a good Christian man all his life. He goes into the world of opera. And to hear him tell it at the time, it may not be this way anymore, but to hear him tell it at the time, this was just a huge sex pit as far as the performers went. And he said, I would fly in, when he was a rising star in the opera world, he said, I would fly into venues where I was doing the lead tenor work. And he said, I would arrive at the airport. And he said, these beautiful women would walk up to me and say, I'm yours for the weekend. I'll do whatever you want. These opera groupies. And it just destroyed him. Just practically destroyed his marriage, destroyed his life. I mean, it was just terrible. And he eventually got out of opera for that reason, got his life kind of straightened back around, and he does a lot of gospel. He does a lot of Christian concert now, sings a wide variety, has recorded tons and tons of albums, has traveled all over the world with his voice. Great job. But I would say there are very few men in the world, when presented with those kind of opportunities, could resist. And he said, in fact, he didn't know anybody who came into the opera world who was not destroyed in the same way that he was destroyed, Christians included. And he said the only way he ever saw it work for anyone to not be destroyed is if they grew up in opera and eventually just got tired of it and decided they weren't doing it anymore. So, but what is the crux of it? Well, the crux of it is still the flesh, because the flesh hides the consequences. It gets you to simply concentrate on the moment, and it overplays what is going to be the rewards and underplays what's going to be the consequences of this. And so if you're not paying attention, the draw is very, very powerful. And if you don't have a framework that can contextualize that draw, then yes, you will stumble and fall down when presented with the opportunity. Thankfully, I've never had to face this, and I don't really intend to face this at any time in my life. I would hope that if I did ever have to face it, that I've gone over the framework enough that I would understand that as a basic level, the flesh is 12 years old, and the behavior that it exhibits is the behavior of a 12-year-old. And that's why I got tickled when the lady who wrote the article was talking about about the stupidity of the agent who had posted that he was checking out Sarah Palin. She said, it sounds like the claim of a 13-year-old boy or someone with the common sense of an 8-year-old, because it's in that time frame. You know, it's like, yeah, he's 12. That's 12. Anytime you find yourself acting like a 12-year-old, that's flesh. and you need to take a step back. So the good thing is that most of us will not have to be subjected, most of us as men, will not have to be subjected to the kind of temptations that men in power are subjected to. And then if perchance some of us are, really the only protection that I can see that we would have as men is to A, control your count, as I talk about in Still Whispers, B, make sure you constantly are aware of the framework of flesh and spirit and evaluating your actions based on the framework of flesh and spirit. And certainly, pay attention to what you're doing, and if it has any hints of a 12-year-old at all, back up. And back up quick. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it to the restaurant. Have a great week.